Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
And welcome to MotorWeek's 67th podcast. I am John Davis. Thank you, Alex Webb, our announcer for the entire 31 years of MotorWeek and much more than that. I'm joined in studio C right now with our road test producer and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson.
It's truly a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, you just got off a plane, didn't you? And our over-the-edge reporter, Stephen Chepnick.
Hello.
And we've got a lot of stuff going on this podcast. We have, of course, our lightning round. We'll look in our mailbag. But, okay, first, some cars that we had on the track during our recent winter testing trip down to Roebling Road Raceway, which is near Savannah, Georgia. And if you've never heard of Roebling Roads, you're not alone. Roebling Road is a two-mile road course just outside the city limits of Savannah, Georgia, and we have been going there for about 25 years to test cars in the wintertime when the weather in Maryland usually isn't conducive to testing, although this year we probably could have stayed home, but Roebling's much more fun. It's a great track, and we had a great group of cars down there, and let's start off with the first one. Probably the most outrageous car we've had at Roebling in the last several years. It's called the Hennessy, for Hennessy Performance, CTSV Hammer Wagon. And Brian Robinson, why don't you kind of give us an idea, what is the Hammer?
I guess by way of background, the folks at Hennessy Performance, what's maybe a little unique about them is they'll pretty much improve the performance on anything you take them. It's not like the SLP stuff that does exclusively Chevy or Roush that does just Fords.
And they have lots of packages.
They'll do anything from SVT Raptor pickups to Grand Cherokees to Corvettes, Vipers. You know, anything you bring them, they will turn it into a high-performance
machine. To a monster.
The car that we had, the Hammer Wagon, was a CTSV wagon with 650 horsepower, which is actually the smallest package you can get. You can get up to 100,000, or not 100,000.
1,000.
1,000 horsepower.
I'd like to see the 100,000.
Yeah, well, it costs about 100,000. That's what I was thinking of. But so it was extremely fun. That's, like I say, it's about 100 horsepower more than a stock ZTSV, which is already 550. So it's pretty healthy. With all that power, it was easy, surprisingly so, to launch, get a good quarter mile times. We had no problem with that. Once we hit the big track, started doing some corners. It wasn't quite as friendly
as the standard V.
Yeah, or as the straight line. Yeah.
It's very much a straight line machine.
It's definitely set up for drag racing. I mean, it likes to be full throttle or no throttle. You know, trying to get through a sweeper with half throttle, it just did not like. It was constantly wanting to go much faster. But it was a blast, and it's about $30,000 over the price of a CTSV. Probably the coolest thing, had electronic exhaust dump valves on it.
Oh,
so you
yeah.
could pretty much hit a switch and just go straight pipe with long tube headers right at the bottom.
And in the back
it
underneath the
insane.
In the back in the spare tire well?
They had it all set up for nitrous if you wanted to slap a couple bottles in there. It was all pre-plumbed and switch for it. So, it could be as insane as you wanted it to be.
Hennessy has been around for a long time. They've cut their chops on, like you said, just about everything, but they did an awful lot of really hot Corvettes for a long while.
And Vipers as well.
And Vipers as well.
As soon as the Viper came out, they were one of the first that really started pumping those
up. Very nice people to work with. They also, what's the name of their supercar?
Venom GT.
The most powerful?
It's the fastest production car
you can buy.
Currently buy,
that's it.
Yes. According to Top Gear, because they're one of the few that have actually gotten to drive it.
Yeah, and we've sort of let them know that we've got our hand up for one, which would be nice. You probably didn't get a chance to see
to drive it. I didn't actually get to drive it on the track. Yeah. I did some walk around stuff with it.
And chicken.
Yeah.
it was easy to drive to dinner. I'll tell you that. It was so docile.
But
it was amazing.
Loud. You could definitely hear it coming from.
And they didn't do a whole lot with styling, which to me, I kind of like.
It was a real sleeper.
Yeah, I like to keep them that way.
So go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, you know, the back seats were very comfortable. Not that, you know, I mean, you can do whatever you want in the back seat, but, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It was nice and plushy.
This is a family show.
Compared to the front seats, which had the Recaro racing seats.
I mean, the back seat was basically your standard CTS wagon, which is no slouch, but, you know, to see this 650 horsepower wagon that could pretty much beat all comers and, you know, still tools around town like a suburban mobile was pretty impressive.
Yeah, we had some fun moments at stoplights down there with guys pull up in Camaros or whatever, and you just hit that exhaust dump valve, and just they all of a sudden don't want to go.
They thought they were being eaten alive. Let's move on to another car we had at Roebling, the Volvo S60R. And this Volvo's new S60 is a very, very nice luxury sports sedan. They've done a good job with it. It was kind of the last vehicle sort of developed under the auspices of Ford when they were still part of Ford Motor Company. They build it as an answer to BMW, specifically, I guess, the 5 Series. And so we took it down there with high hopes. And what we found was a car that was very much a Volvo, a very nice performance sedan, but maybe not quite a BMW. Brian, what would you say?
Yeah, I would firmly agree with that. A little behind-the-scenes info. My working title of this test was Swedish Fish Out of Water, which didn't quite go through, but
didn't quite make it to production.
By that, I mean, as you said, it's really a great car. You drive it to work every day, you'd be like, wow, this thing's pretty cool, but it just does not belong on a racetrack. And the big reason was just the brakes were not track ready at all. I mean, after a couple hard laps, they started going away big time.
I thought the suspension was a little soft, too.
Although it was fine. It was great. It did stay really flat, which was surprising. Just no feedback, as you say, it was soft. Yeah.
We had a 3 Series BMW there, so we didn't have the direct competitor for the car, but certainly had something to judge it by. And even with a 4-cylinder turbo in the 3 Series, it felt like a more capable car.
And it's, on the positive side, incredible straight line.
Yep.
Sneaky quick. I mean, it did not feel fast. But
the numbers were.
Yeah, we were low 5s, 0 to 60s, and mid-13s quarter, I think. And it just takes off.
Yeah, sometimes I think that car reviewers make too much of track work, because obviously most people don't drive the cars on the track. If you did not hear us and you went and bought an S60R, you would think that you've got a very, very special Volvo, and I might say the most performance in a Volvo that we've ever seen. So it's a car that won't disappoint you unless you really ask it to do something it wasn't really designed to do in the first place. Well, I think it's a step up for the brand, just like the S60 is. They've got probably a ways to go to be on par with their BMW and even Audi friends. But the S60R was a very, very potent, enjoyable, easy-to-drive machine, but just not suited for 2 miles of switchbacks.
Yeah, it would be hard for them, too, to really make it any more serious, just because
all your customers away.
Yeah, I'm sure who it would appeal to, because a Volvo buyer wouldn't want it, and, you know, a BMW buyer I don't think would be interested either. So
yeah, I'm not sure someone interested in a Volvo really is going to be interested in a BMW. And, of course, then you have the problem, if you want a BMW, probably it's going to be pretty hard to get you to look at something else, which is the problem that Cadillac and some other brands have had. Moving on, one more car that we had at Roebling. We've had Corvette ZR1s over the years, a couple of them, and the latest version. This was the Centennial Edition, which was basically in honor of the 100th anniversary of the Chevrolet brand. It was all decked out in a special metallic paint job and wheels and all that. But it also gave us an excuse to hop back into a ZR1, which is always a great experience because it is such an incredibly capable car. This trip to Roebling, though, made a lot of the pluses and the minuses stand out, I think, more so than ever because we were somewhat used to the car. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, as you mentioned, it doesn't take much of an excuse to get behind the wheel of a ZR1. We're always ready for that. And the 100th anniversary package was new. Also a new performance package. I think it's PDE, I believe is the name. And it includes like Michelin Pilot Sport Cup tires, which are incredibly grippy. And that was kind of really going back to back with one without those tires, 0-1 without those tires, you would notice a big difference. There's incredible amount of grip coming out of corners, so much so to it. You know, it's easy to forget how insanely brutal the ZR1 can be. I mean, it drives like a regular car. You can drive it at half throttle and have no idea what this thing can do. And this, those tires really kind of made it feel more like a race car, basically. You know, with all the traction aids dialed back, you know, putting power down out of a corner, it just takes off, and then all of a sudden, you know, it could break loose on you.
And that was the point that you and a couple other of the testers made, was that it made the new tires made it harder to figure out when the car was going to give up. So it stuck and stuck and stuck, and all of a sudden you were flying.
Yeah.
So you had to really keep your wits about you, because you could actually overdrive the car.
Yeah,
I was going to say, but this just watching all the cars and just you know, on the track, it seemed like the most complete track car that that I think we had of the group that we had. It was
that's probably true.
I mean, you drove them, and you saw it coming, then you didn't. But you never lost. At least it just on the track it never seemed like it lost control. Always, you know, fully in control of the car.
You know, the C7, they keep saying it's two years away. But the biggest thing about the new Corvette when it finally arrives is thank goodness we're going to get some kind of a new interior, because the interior upgrades on this car actually were a step backwards.
Or at least firmly parallel. They supposedly had new seats, which I
thought they were really uncomfortable.
I don't know that they were any different. I think they just had some suede inserts on them or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, they're horrible. But, you know, that's all stuff we've complained about before. There's still no better performance car
for the money
out there. I mean, that car, you can just instantly get in. Almost anybody can get in that thing and just go fast right away and safely.
Okay, let's turn our attention just for a few moments to the Geneva Motor Show, which is the last of the really big European auto shows for this season. Of course, we still have New York upcoming here in the U.S. A lot of the cars they've shown there are not going to make it here, but there are a couple that are, and they're worth talking about. It looks like BMW is joining the four-door coupe routine, 2013 BMW 6 Series Gran Coupe, and that's GRAN.
One like more Grand car. This is what they need, one more car in their lineup.
It's a little confusing as it is.
To figure out where it goes and what it's in between. And
it's primarily, it's based mostly on the 5, which, of course, the 6 is too, I guess. And it's about the size of a 5, but it has the roof line of a 6. And it will probably be like its counterparts over at Mercedes and Audi, you know, a limited car. Not a lot of people will buy it, but those that do buy it will have something very unique. Bentley has shown its first ever SUV concept. And let me ask you, Stephen.
Can't wait.
The Bentley EXP9F SUV. Can you imagine a Bentley SUV?
You know what? If any company is going to do it, you know it's going to have all the luxury items you can ever imagine, an insane amount of room in the back seat. You probably lounge back. You probably take a nap in the back and, you know,
really
reclining.
Big, ugly lights.
Does it come with a butler as well? Or
It looks like it could. It's got high haunches in the back.
You could probably get that added. I know I was just over in Spain with Bentley on the new GT V8. And one of the PR people from Bentley was talking about a list of some of the extras you can get on a Bentley.
You're kidding.
And you would not believe what you could and actually couldn't add to a Bentley car. But the list just goes on what you could add.
It's fun to make fun of them for doing it. But, I mean, if you look at
probably
Porsche.
A big market.
Yeah, if you look at Porsche, I mean, what the money they've made from selling Cayennes and the sedans.
And they got the new one coming.
I mean,
made a lot of money. Yeah. And all of us, including myself, that thought, you know, how awful a Porsche SUV. Yeah. We were not only proved wrong, but that SUV turned around to be the basis of the Panamera.
Yeah, and then they're putting all that money into making the 911 that much better. So
yeah.
It's hard to fault them for doing it.
One more car let's talk about, and then we'll go on. And this is and it's purely because of excess. The Ferrari F12 Berlinetta, basically here you are in a world, as some of the folks at Car and Driver mentioned, where your run-of-the-mill performance car has got 460 to 550 horsepower. So you've got to have something from the exotics that goes overboard. Well, 730 horsepower, front-mounted, rear-drive V12. However, I don't really have an issue with that. I mean, if you're going to buy an exotic car, that's what you're buying an exotic car wrong. But is this really the most beautiful Ferrari ever done? And
well,
I guess beauty's in
that.
The eye of the beholder.
Yeah, I'll wait till I see in person to say that.
But. The picture so far, it's got a big gaping grin, but it doesn't seem to have a lot to go for it otherwise. But anyway, impressive car, and one that no doubt we will be salivating and trying to get our hands on in the not-too-distant future. There's a lot of stuff online going on in Geneva. Even if you miss the immediate coverage of the show, it's worth going back and looking at. There's enough new styling there to give you a good idea of where the industry as a whole is headed. And one more, the Evoque, the Land Rover Evoque concept convertible. Really? Now, I guess Nissan tried it, so why not?
If there's going to be a first crossover SUV, there's got to be a second, right? Convertible.
And so that's something else. That's just
I was going to say, the Geneva, the Paris, all the European
it is
auto
the
shows,
fashion show.
They always show off anything and everything they can think of.
It's a very exciting show. I mean, it's the end of the season. It sort of wraps it up, but it's very much like a fashion runway, more so than any other show. Okay, let's move on now to our lightning round, where we have 2 minutes to talk about a topic. And at the end of that 2 minutes, our producer, Michelle Parker, will ring the bell, and anyone still talking will get the hook, right? Except, unless it's me, of course. All right, here we go. And don't start the clock yet. With $5 a gallon gas predicted, not by us, but by many others, by this summer, are automakers prepared with the right kind of vehicles consumers want this time around? Start the clock, and what do you guys think? Why don't we start with you, Steven?
No, I think the answer is a no for right now, just because what they have. They're not.
But why would you say that? You got 40 mile per gallon cars all over the place.
But I think people know that already. I don't think anyone's just going to go out now and. You know, I mean, if they're going to buy a hybrid or an Accent or an Elantra or any of these other 40, Fusion, they're going to buy it already. I think people
But don't
have
you
it.
Think the industry is better prepared now? I mean, when we've had these spikes before, you basically had, 25, 30 mile per gallon family cars, and that was it.
We're in much better shape right now. There's a lot of,
but I think that's been happening over the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, no, it takes time to develop cars.
Right.
Now, are we in Nirvana land? Probably not.
Yeah, well, we still got work to do. That's for sure. But I'd love to be one of these people that predict these kind of things, because you hear them, when they are on the radio or whatever, and prices are going to be $5 a gallon, or maybe they won't be, and they'll only be $4 a gallon. It's like, okay, well, no, I want that job where I can just
be a pundit. You want to be a pundit? No one ever goes back to do any fact checking with you after it's gone.
And then either way, you can say you're right. You can say, well, I'd say they probably wouldn't get that high.
3 years ago, I don't think any of us at this table would have guessed there would be so many internal combustion engine vehicles that can seat 5 people comfortably with highway fuel economy ratings of 40 miles per gallon. I certainly didn't think so.
Yeah, we're definitely much better off this go around.
I mean, to the point where it's starting to make some of the electrification that we're seeing look like maybe not the smartest investment. Although I think eventually the way the fuel economy standards are going, it will be. But certainly right now. But I think all right. So we got a split decision. Steven doesn't think we're that well off. You and I think we are made a lot of progress. But I agree with Steven. A lot more needs to be done. All right, let's dip into our MotorWeek mailbag. Here's a question from Peter. I would consider the purchase of a diesel-powered car, but I am concerned about the car in the winter. Does diesel still gel in the winter as it did when I was younger? I need some education when it comes to diesel. I actually got this question from Peter, and I did look into it a little bit. And the oil companies claim that in your area, wherever you are, there are additives that keep you from having to add anything else. with the possible caveat is if we have spikes in temperature downward, you know, 20, 30 below zero. I don't think we've had any problems with in the last couple of years with diesel-powered cars in winter, have we? We have a Volkswagen TDI.
So. Yeah, we had a Jetta over this past winter, and it definitely takes a little more time to get started. I don't know if that's the fault of the fuel. I don't know if the low sulfur diesel fuel is different or not, but I don't think I've heard of any problems. Last thing I can remember that we had a diesel excursion.
Right.
And I remember we had a that's going back 8-10 years.
Yeah.
And then we had a super cold snap, and that thing would not start.
So I think our answer is try what – it doesn't seem to be the problem it used to be. Try going with a good name brand of diesel fuel. You'll probably be okay. If not, basically go where everybody else goes for bad car advice, the internet.
And they still sell plenty of additives.
There's additives from name brands.
If you don't feel that what you're buying in your area will get the job done, I mean, there's plenty of winter additives.
But don't add it unless you think you've got a problem.
Oh. And don't put regular gas in there either.
Yeah, the old thing about diluting it with gasoline, I would assume that's an old wife's tale you don't want to follow. Okay, I guess that is it. Stephen, you didn't have anything to add to
no,
that?
No, I mean, I think the diesels.
You think we're ready for diesels?
That's a completely separate topic, but I think, with the price of oil, I don't know where that's going to
be. Well, I love diesels. We all do around this table, but now even Volkswagen is saying they're going to basically do a lot of hybrids, and they were kind of the diesel king. So that's it for Motor Week podcast number 67. I'm John Davis. Thank you very much for joining us. We've been with you today with our road test producer and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson, and our over-the-edge reporter, Stephen Chupnik. Our audio engineer is Jim Bigwood, who always makes sure we come through loud and clear. Our podcast creator is Bob Mixter. And, of course, our producer, the lady with the bell, Michelle Parker. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Be sure to keep catching Motor Week on all your local public television stations and on the Velocity HD cable channel. Till next week time, I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at motorweek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.